Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
And now on Radio National Summer, it's time for Street Stories. According to UNICEF, 75% of the children who live in Baghdad aren't going to school. And across the rest of Iraq, up to 70% of schools have been closed because of a lack of security. Earlier this year, in the northern city of Mosul, 42 university students were kidnapped while on a bus on their way to morning classes. On Street Stories today, we'll hear what life in a war zone is like for teenagers and young people in Iraq through their own voices. Two of the girls are students in their late teens and early 20s who've embraced blogging as a way to get through the difficulties of war. Bassam Sebti is a postgraduate student who recently left Baghdad and is currently living in Philadelphia. Before he left, he was an Iraqi correspondent for the Washington Post. Here's Speech is Silver, Silence is Gold.
You ask what is it like living in Iraq as a young person? I can't give you a specific answer for that. It's like being a millionaire and living in the streets. In my case, as a young person, I think I have so much energy that I should use it to change the world around me into better. And I have ambitions and dreams, as all youth people. But unfortunately, our energy is being wasted, and our dreams are being killed, and all what we are in general don't do anything for anyone, even ourselves. We are not living alive. We are dying. That's what all I can say.
I was born in 29th of January 1992. I grew up among well-educated families. My school is far away from my house, and the way to it is dangerous, so every day considered as a challenge. I have many dreams and ambitions. I wish that one day they become true. I want to be an engineer or a pharmacist in the future. My mom always supports me to accomplish my ambitions. Optimism is my strategy, always. The computer and internet are my life and what I do in my spare time. But if we don't have electricity, I spend my spare time reading, writing, listening to music, and doing some handmade work. I found that blogging is a great way to express my thoughts, opinions, and feelings to the world, to get friends, and to share with them my happy and sad moments.
There is no electricity in our class. The class more like refrigerator in winter. It's horrible. Plus, even if we had a light, we have no conditioner, no heater. There are so many significant problems we face every day. No electricity for more than 40 hours. Books are not really a problem. The professor knows what we are passing through and they try to take care of everything by writing the lecture on computer.
I'm 27 years old. I was born in Baghdad, Iraq. And I was born 2 months before the war with Iran started. I live now in Philadelphia in the United States. I'm doing my master's in writing studies. The problem is fear is planted in the heart of Iraqis now. If you ask any Iraqi, he'll tell you that he is scared to hell, he's traumatized, he's unable to do anything normal anymore.
Sunday, October 14, 2007. Salam all. First, I have an announcement. If you want to make a visit to my house, you are welcome. You can find me in there anytime. I am not going anywhere. I don't intend to go to anywhere. I am not going to lie and say that I don't like going out and making visits, but you are a very dear guest. I am spending my holiday in my house. Don't think it's a boring holiday. I am doing all the sort of things that you do. I sometimes go for a walk, taking some steps from one room to another, from kitchen to guest room, from bedroom to bathroom, and sometimes I make a progress and go to our backyard, just for a walk in the garden. You know, walking is a good sport.
Friday, January 11th, 2008. It has been a really crazy week. I had many, many exams. I did okay in most of them. Today, I woke up feeling scared. I had a nightmare that a camp was attacked and I was in the middle. I didn't care about the nightmare, and I got ready to go to school. In such cold weather, with no electricity, just like every day, I was waiting for the driver in the hall when heavy shooting started. The driver came with three girls. Grandma didn't allow me to go out. When shooting almost calmed down, I ran to the car, and the driver drove fast. We drove among so many tanks. The National Guards didn't allow any car to pass the bridge except ours, because they saw we were students and we wouldn't attack them. So we drove among the Iraqi tanks and the National Guard slowly. As soon as I reached school, at 7:37 a.m. exactly, a loud explosion happened, followed by another few minutes later. What a great way to start school!
There is something you don't know about me. It's how much I love music. I think I have a musician ears. I like music. Je l'aime. It seemed like the pilots of the American airplanes heard about my interest in the sound of the warplane and military airplane. Not true. But they really seem like they have an order not to let anyone sleep. I am so sorry for disappointing them. I woke up one day and I found myself in love with the sound they make. It's not like other sounds. These sounds are special and they are a natural sound. They are like lullabies. They are not merely an annoying, ugly, awful, hideous sounds and impossible to hear. They help mothers to hush their babies. They help the community to discover the value of silence. If speech was made from silver, then silent is made from gold.
The situation is not good. And many car bombs entered Mosul today. They didn't explode yet, and I hope they won't. So please don't forget to pray for us. 2 weeks ago, a car exploded at 10 p.m. Many Iraqis died. Poor people, they were in their houses, asleep, or having showers, maybe studying, or having dinner. And for no reason, an idiot put a car there, killed and injured tens of citizens.
Well, I had some relatives who unfortunately stopped sending their children to schools because of the danger, because of some children, for instance, were kidnapped while they were walking to school, or the buses, for instance, got attacked by insurgents, and students were kidnapped, whether they are like high school students or university students. And most families these days are afraid of sending their children or sons and daughters to schools because it is dangerous. Even just to go out in the street and walk, it's that dangerous. I know that, unfortunately, even university professors themselves got attacked. And I think this is an organized crime. This is not something that was not planned. I guess insurgents deliberately attack students and university professors or high school teachers or elementary school teachers as well. There are really, really hard stories, like some teachers were even beheaded in front of their students. It reached that extent that made, of course, students traumatized. It made parents paranoid and unable to even think about sending their kids again to school. The insurgents, especially Al-Qaeda, failed to control Afghanistan and Kabul, for instance. And now, it's after it's liberated, they didn't have any other place to control. So they're trying to change Baghdad and Iraq in general and to be like Afghanistan under Taliban. They don't want to see women as free as they used to be. They don't want to see men educated. They don't want even the children who are the seeds of any a prosperous country. They don't want to see them educated. So if they keep attacking people, if they keep killing people, if they keep attacking schools and any place that has to do with education, they're going to plant the seeds of fear. And that's what they kind of succeeded, but not to the extent I can say that they succeeded more than 50%, because Iraqis are still, despite everything, they still hope to go back to schools, because education in Iraq is very important to us.
Monday, October 22nd, 2007. I can't forget that during Saddam's time, we were go to eat ice cream every day after midnight. Oh, I want the old days to come back. I want the old days to come back. I want to see the moon, to see the sky afternoon, to see the hope coming soon, to see the life. Like a movie cartoon, not like a frightened movie night. Not like that. I want to be a normal girl living a normal life. Not this girl who is sitting in front of the computer writing a diary and trying to be such a funny, lovely girl. I just want to be someone else.
Under Saddam, life wasn't very easy. It was difficult, but at the same time, it was relatively normal. We were able to live normally. We were able to go to schools. We were able to go have fun. We were able to socialize normally. But at the same time, we had some economical problems, especially during the 1990s when the sanctions were imposed on Iraq after the invasion of Kuwait. Under Saddam, we feared only one man, and we knew to avoid criticizing him. And that's how, for me, for instance, and my family, that's how we survived.
Friday, November 23rd, 2007. The acclimatization we have is unbelievable. Week number one. On Saturday, there was a lot of shooting, and I had to study for my biology exam in the corridor near the stairs. I did really good, by the way, and took one of the highest marks in the class. 2 days later, I was studying mathematics when a mine exploded. My room was full of dust, and I ran to avoid the bullets. A big shrapnel fell in our garden. Its size is twice the palms. It could kill anyone. A window was broken. At that time, my grandpa and dad were fixing the windows and handles because of a previous explosion happened in the morning. After the explosion, there was heavy shooting. 30 minutes later, I went into my room to study for my math exam. After about 5 minutes, I heard sound of shouting coming from my neighbor's house. I ran and looked from the window and saw National Guards in my neighbor's garden, kicking their doors to enter their house. They were nervous, no doubt after what happened to them. The neighborhood was inspected, and many men were arrested. They are innocent neighbors and have been living in this neighborhood for 30 or 40 years. Beside, their houses has been damaged because all of these explosions. Many mines were put in the street in front of our house, and I had to change my way to school to another longer one to avoid them. I seriously thought of moving to another school, but then I changed my mind and decided to stay.
You're with Street Stories on ABC Radio National, and today, getting on with life in a war zone through the voices and blogs of young Iraqis.
You ask what my day-to-day life is like. Do I go out much? I go out for college every day, except on the weekend, of course, and except that I go every month to the dentist. And I think that's it. But you can say we go and make a visit to our relative every month. Do I visit friends? I don't know even where my friend's house is.
Week number 2. I had a lot of exams and a lot of homework, and I had to stay up late to study, alone in my room, which is far away from my parents' room. We didn't have electricity, and I used the rechargeable torches and my headlight. Very romantic. Snipers settled my neighbor's house, which is directly behind our house, and faced my room. I went back to sleep in my sister's room. She's nice and allowed me to stay, but she complains every night about that. I know she doesn't like to share a room with a teenager. Do you know what? The mines became much less than before. The sniper killed the terrorist behind the house while he was implanting a mine. After a week, the sniper left, and the situation became worse, and the mines were put everywhere in the neighborhood.
I just want to say something. Before the war took place, I don't even know what Sunni mean and what Shia mean. Even now, and after I know what the difference between them, I don't ask the people to which group they belong, because simply, I don't care.
Baghdad, before the war, and even until, let's say, 2004, was a very mixed city. You definitely find people of different sects living in several different parts of the city. But of course, because of the Al-Qaeda, because of the militias, especially the Mahdi army militias that belong to the Shia cleric, Muqtada al-Sadr, they started attacking each other, but not face to face. They started taking revenge by killing people of the other sect and displacing them from their homes in the city, in the city itself. So in the mixed neighborhoods, if one neighborhood is controlled by Sunni insurgents, they drove out all Shias who live there and controlled the neighborhood for Sunnis only. And the Shia militia did the same out of revenge. They displaced all the Sunni people who lived in the Shia dominant areas, and of course some of them were killed. You hear about the car bombs. They killed hundreds of people by, let's say, one car bomb, and that's how Baghdad is segregated now. If you look at the map, it's not as it used to be. It's more like this is a Sunni neighborhood, this is a Shia neighborhood, and there are some relatively mixed neighborhoods that are still kind of stable.
I asked you guys numerous times, can you please get on the sidewalk?
I read a lot of reports, and I've been in touch with my family and friends, and they told me that even universities themselves are segregated now. Before they used very mixed, and now they there is like a what's quote unquote like a Shia university, a Sunni university, in which most of the students there are from the same neighborhood. And now if a student is graduating from high school, they'd rather go to the university that is in their neighborhood so that they avoid danger by insurgents, for instance, in the other neighborhood. So yes, it changed a lot.
In the third day of Eid, we didn't go out, but we received guests. Our neighbors came to congratulate us. They are very kind and good Shiites neighbors. The father, A, is an engineer. The conversation interested me a lot. A talked about how silly is the differences between the first day of Eid for Sunnis and Shiites. For the Sunnis, the first day was on Wednesday. For the Shiites who follow Al-Sadr, the first day was on Thursday. And for the Shiites who follow Al-Sistani, the first day of Eid was on Friday. It's wrong and ridiculous, because it depends on the moon. Everyone knows the first day should be on Wednesday. A said, the religion should gather us, not separate us. If the religion separates its people, then I don't want to belong to any. But I am sure this thing is made by the government. They want to see the Iraqis separated. But anyway, it's not going to happen. I loved what he said and wrote it at once. Well, I celebrated Eid for 8 days with the Sunnis, Shiites, and Christians.
I can give you an idea about the role of women before and after the invasion. The women in Iraq, especially in Baghdad, were very open-minded and very secular, let's say, in one way or another. They had the freedom of like any other woman in the world could have. They were able to teach in schools, work in factories, be wives and workers at the same time. They helped Iraqi men, especially during the Iraq-Iran war, a lot. And you if you go to any institution, to any factory, to any company, to like most places, you would find women leading all these places because men were fighting in the front. After the war, I mean, after the invasion, the women thought that they would get more freedom than they used to get under Saddam. And unfortunately, that never happened because the politicians themselves are more conservatives and more Islamic, and they try to oppress the freedom of women. Let me give you an example. My aunt, for instance, is a journalist, and she's a very moderate person. She doesn't wear a scarf. She's not religious. She's very secular. And what happened to her is she was threatened several times because, first, she doesn't wear a scarf, and second, because she drives a car. And third, because she was a journalist, and she never quit, but eventually insurgents reached her, and first they said they're going to behead her if they catch her because she doesn't wear the scarf. Finally, insurgents drove her out of her house with her husband, and took over the house and gave it to one of the insurgents' families. My aunt lives in a Shia neighborhood now because she's a Shia, and she's still afraid. She's traumatized. Her husband was kidnapped because of her, and they almost killed him until she paid them a $20,000 ransom. And now she's displaced. Now she's forced to wear a scarf wherever she goes. But at the same time, she's still strong and she's still hopeful that one day these people will be defeated. But it's very hard to believe how the situation of women changed from being pretty modern and secular to very oppressive and extreme.
Week number 3. It was Tuesday night when suddenly I had sense of optimism. I don't know why, but I felt that the situation will get better. In that day, Grandma phoned and said that the situation is much better in Baghdad and kept talking about the improvements. I just felt that it'll happen to us in Mosul too, because the capital of Iraq is witnessing progress. On Wednesday morning, in my way to school, my friends were studying, but I was thinking of the old restaurants we used to go to in Baghdad. I spent the most beautiful days there. I miss those days a lot, and I was thinking of the situation in Mosul in general, from where the rebuilding will start. The governor promised by next January there will be no more car bombs, and the police manager and the leader of one of the national Iraqi troops promised to defeat all of the terrorists. He's a great man. I've seen most of his speeches and support him a lot. In our way back home after school, the girls and I started discussing matters about the party we are planning to have on the next day at school. What food to bring and what to wear. And in my way home, I was talking with my friend who's 2 years younger than me about the party, music, etc. It was 2 p.m. I was tired, but extremely happy. The driver suddenly asked us not to look at the right. Before he finished his sentence, I saw a murdered man thrown in the middle of the street with a lot of blood around him. I came home with my face red and trying to hold my tears. In the next day, I was feeling better, and I got through that. The party was good, but not many girls could attend.
I didn't feel I had future when I was in Iraq. That's one of the reasons I left. Some of my friends who are still there say that their future is dark for them. That's what they feel. They feel that they're trapped in the country. They can't leave either because they don't have money or they don't have place to go. All they do is that they live in the same neighborhood. They work there. They socialize there, and that's it. Like, they don't even go outside the boundaries of the these newly made neighborhoods.
What was Iraq like before? It was a home. What's home mean? Isn't it where you feel in peace and secure? Isn't it the place that you always go into when you don't know where to go? So I think it's my country, and I am kind of proud that it is my country, but I can't define as my home, even the fact that I am still living on it, and I can't imagine being away from it.
In Speech is Silver, Silence is Gold, you heard Lena Zora reading from the blog of 16-year-old Sunshine and Christine Nesbitt, who was the other student, HNK. The program was produced by Anna Burns, and the sound engineer was Louis Mitchell. I'm Claudia Taranto, and coming up next on Radio National Summer, it's The Night Air.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.